Hey, this is Mike Evans. Listen to every episode of Schlereth and Evans on demand at 1043thefan.com. Presented by Siltahara Motors, the home of the zero down with Chapter 7 and 13 bankruptcies. Regardless of your financial standing, no one should be without a vehicle. Visit the special financing section at sthmotors.com.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Denver. It's a Reaction Monday, powered by Superbook Sports. In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Denver 7's Troy Rank and Nate Jackson.
Okay.
San Francisco.
Yeah, KJ.
Prescott takes off running the football. Whoa, I don't think this is going to work out. Well, they'll be able to clock this game. Plan for it. Down, down. Oh, my gosh.
Right up.
Official gets in the way. The game's over.
Gosh,
the game is over. Oh, he did.
Sure about the call, though.
Well, this is where you can't set your own ball as a center. You got to give it to the ref. Dak Prescott should have looked and found the ref. You can't give it to your center.
Boom. Happy MLK Day, everybody. January 17th, 2022. I am not Mike Evans. I'm Nate Jackson. I'm here with Troy Rank. He's not Mark Schlereth, but we're here with you for 4 hours today. What's going on, Troy?
Everything's good, man. Drive is great. It's a wonderful time to be in Colorado. So much going on with the Avs playing well, the Nuggets. They got smoked last night, but they've shown some things. And this is one of the most important off seasons in Broncos franchise history.
Yeah.
With coach, quarterback, and ownership. So it's a great time to be in the sports.
We're talking about the coach issue with the Broncos and some coaching implications yesterday in some games we watched.
Yeah, listen, I'm watching that Cowboys-Niners game, and the Cowboys deserve to lose. Let's get that right. And I'm one who's very critical of officials. You follow me on Twitter. You can see that. I've advocated for years they need full-time officials that are in better shape. The game's gotten too fast for them. I'm not going to put that last play on the official.
No.
Hey, do you practice situational football, and do you understand that when Dak starts off running, when I'm watching it live, I'm like, does he think he's running for a touchdown? Because once you get past about 10, 11 yards, the clock at that point is right. You're in the bullseye of the clock.
Yeah.
What did you think when it happened? Myself, I put more of the onus on Prescott in that situation, the player,
definitely,
than I blame the ref, only because the Cowboys, Randy Gregory tackling a guard in that previous series, was the game. That was the play that officially lost the game.
Yeah.
Just complete stupidity. But what did you think when you saw Prescott take off as a player who's practiced, you know, walk through situational football? For me, that's on Prescott, maybe Kellen Moore, but to me, it's on the player on the field. The guy you're paying $140 million has to know the rule.
Yeah, he's got to know the rule. He did not hand the ball to the ref. He just put it down, and then they formed a little barricade where the ref couldn't get by him. It was almost like they're trying to box out the ref. But I don't even like the play call. I really don't. And I know the 49ers were protecting the sidelines with their coverage, and so it probably would have been difficult to get one of those outbreaking routes like they did on the previous play to Schultz. But there was something available to him that could have gotten 10 to 12 yards that wouldn't have taken as much time and would have given him a better opportunity to spike the ball. But you said it, man. They got their butts kicked all day. I think everyone was afraid of this matchup for the Cowboys. Every Cowboy fan who was prepared for this game was scared the Niners were going to come in there and beat them. You know, the style that the Niners play, the Cowboys weren't prepared for, and the 49ers beat them up pretty well. And I thought Kyle Shanahan did a good job coaching that game. I think he's done a couple back-to-back weeks, masterful job coaching that team. And our buddy Orlando's going on to the second round of the playoffs. He's coaching. He's assistant BT over there. Bobby Turner's the running backs coach. So Orlando Franklin is coaching with the 49ers, and he's got to be pretty excited about it. I grew up a 49er fan. So I grew up in the Bay Area. Posters on my wall of all those 49er guys, Jerry Rice, Joe Montana. Those were my heroes growing up. So all my friends still are 49er fans. Now, when I became an NFL player, I no longer was a football fan. I was, of course, a fan of the game, but you're not a fan of your childhood team the same way anymore. You know, you're one of them. You guys are peers. So, but I've kind of crept back into the fandom with my buddies because they're so excited. And, of course, knowing, having connections with the coaching staff there. And I played with John Lynch and obviously played for Mike Shanahan and, you know, have met Kyle. And so pretty excited to see them playing well. I think they beat the brakes off the Cowboys and deserve to win that game. And this last play conversation kind of muddles that fact. The Cowboys got beat up, and so did the Eagles. The NFC East got beat up yesterday. So, but yeah, I don't like the play call. I don't like the play call, the sneak, you know, trying to get yardage and spike it. I think that Kellen Moore, maybe a little bit of the shine was worn off of him in the last, you know, last couple of weeks. I know he was a hot name for a possible head coach, but it brings up a, and you and I were talking about this before we jumped on the air, it brings up an interesting conundrum for Jerry Jones and the Cowboys, because Mike McCarthy, what do you do with him? Do you fire him? Because they seem to have underperformed, right? And if they don't fire him, he might lose one or both of his coordinators.
Yeah, for me, I'm not sure how you bring McCarthy back after that loss. I wrote on Twitter last night, at Troy Rank, at Twitter, you can always hit me up there, that if you want to upset owners, lose home games during the season with no shows because they get embarrassed because they're around their rich friends, and lose playoff home games.
Yeah.
And
your first game, right? Opening round.
Your first game, brutal. Opening round, his first playoff game as the Cowboys coach. I think that's 11 straight years now when they've been in the playoffs. They haven't advanced to the second round. Some crazy stat like that for the Cowboys. I mean, they haven't won a title since the days of Barry Switzer and then Jimmy Johnson prior to that. The issue with McCarthy, I don't say like guys should get fired. I don't like saying that. But how do you bring him back, Nate, given his clock management issues throughout the season? I mean, throughout the year, even as they were one of the best teams early and they stumbled late and then or stumbled in the middle and got hot late, one of the biggest questions was, if they ever get into a close game, is McCarthy going to be detriment to them? And it just feels like the game's fast for him. They do things that don't make sense. And if even if you somehow absolve him from that last play, that fake punt was one of the dumbest minutes of football I've ever seen.
I like the play.
No, the fake punt's fantastic.
Yeah, and then what, the punt team stayed on the field?
They stayed on the field to try to draw a timeout from the Niners who were going to be, quote, confused. That the Niners really, they're out. Scared that you're going to run a play with your punt team in as an offense? Come That's on. Right out of the Tom McMahon school of dumpster fire special teams. Like, why would they care? Fine, run it. We're not going to burn a timeout. You want to snap it to the punter again?
Go ahead, punt it. Punt it from your 30.
Punt it on first down. Or like, I'm saying like they were going right. to, they're acting like they're going to run a play and
with
they're so confused.
Unit?
Yeah, with their punt team unit on the field. Why would the Niners call timeout in that situation? They'd have no fear of that. Because the only thing that's going to happen there is a run play. They're not going to let your punter throw it.
No.
It's just... And you get to delay a game out of it.
Right.
So you take all the momentum of the fake punt and squash it because of your own delay a game. That's the kind of stuff that's either you're coaching it or allowing it to happen. McCarthy's had too many instances this year. And I'm not saying you look at his record, he deserves to be fired because he doesn't. The issue is Jerry Jones is impatient. He's clearly getting toward the end. He wants a title. I think he's going to fire him. This is total speculation on my part. But he didn't say no last night. That was what was
didn't
curious.
He, but didn't he say...
I'm not going to talk about it right now.
But didn't he say, I'm not doing any coaching changes or something like that?
He didn't. I haven't seen that. The only thing I've seen is, like, I'm not even addressing that right now. And if he said that, then...
He said that's not on the table.
Yeah. I just...
I could put it on the table whenever I want it.
He could put it on the
it's
table.
Right here next to me. I can pull it up and put it on the table.
That's going
to
be an uncomfortable season-ending interview with McCarthy and Jerry Jones explaining that fake punt disaster, the complete lack of discipline on that last drive. What did they have? A hands to the face.
Yep.
A defensive holding.
Yeah,
and
that was
Randy
brutal.
Gregory literally tackles the guard on a run play. I don't know that I've seen that.
It was like he was mad that he was getting blocked.
Right.
And he's like, you know what? It was just this frustration that boiled over in a really, really awful time.
But that's just, I mean, it's a sign of immaturity
it
to
is.
The point. And I take it, it's not a sign of immaturity. It's a sign of pure selfishness at that point.
Yeah.
That you're so upset you're not making a play, you're going to just tackle a guy?
Yeah.
Right in front of the official. And then they're like, oh, you can't call everything. Okay, I agree. That's just an egregious foul where you just tackle him. So, McCarthy, they're so undisciplined. His clock management, it's like he learned under the feet of Vic Fangio on how to manage a clock. And then that between that fake punt, the undisciplined defense at the end, and then Dak Prescott, just to me, that's on him. And if Moore called it, then they deserve blame. But it's in the headset. McCarthy can say, no, we're going out, we're throwing outside. I don't trust it. I want to get one shot in the end zone here. He's the head coach. Because I hate that when they say, well, afterward, you know, Kellen called this or that. You're the head coach. You get paid to make executive decisions. So to me, he's in trouble, Nate. And if and I don't know, Kellen Moore to me has been too green to be a head coach. He's 33. He doesn't command a room. He's more of a professor type. I think he needs a couple more years of seasoning. This is me personally. Dan Quinn is going to get offers this offseason, whether it's the Broncos or someone else.
Yep.
And so would I be shocked if they promote Quinn to keep Moore and then can McCarthy? I wouldn't be shocked because the disappointment in Dallas this morning is real.
Disappointment's real. We're going to get into more of that disappointment and talk about all those other NFL wildcard games. We're going to do that next.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Denver. It's a Reaction Monday, powered by Superbook Sports. In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Denver 7's Troy Rank and Nate Jackson.
That's right. It's MLK Day. Some of you guys are got the day off. Some of you don't. Whatever it is, we thank you for joining us. I'm here with Troy Rank, and I'm Nate Jackson. Typically, you're used to hearing Mike and Mark, but hey, you got an upgrade today, right?
Better looking.
Way better looking. Way better looking. We're just going to try to hold the fort down for those guys. They do such a great job. We're talking about this in particular. Well, we're talking about Wild Card Weekend, in particular the Cowboys 49ers game yesterday. I think probably that was the best game of the three yesterday. You had the Eagles and the Bucks. Never really was close. The Buccaneers overwhelmed them right off the bat. And the Eagles just aren't there yet, are they? I mean, they scored 15 points in the fourth quarter to make it 31-15. Kind of like the way the Broncos went into Dallas and stomped the Cowboys somehow. That should have been the first indication that maybe the Cowboys weren't, you know, what we thought they were. Yesterday was the nail in the coffin for this season, but the Chiefs looked amazing, 42-21 over the Steelers. Steelers, you know, scored a few touchdowns, made it respectable, but the Chiefs look like the Chiefs we thought they were. But I think the 49ers-Cowboys, we have a little juice left to squeeze out of that one, and that was a close game at the end there. You know, it came down to that last play. What do you think would have happened had they been able to spike that ball and take one last shot at the end zone? I mean, sometimes when we see stuff happen like that, we're like, oh, you blew the game. Well, they still would have had to score a touchdown right there. You think they would have had a chance to doing that?
I mean, they had a legitimate shot only because it's not a Hail Mary. Hail Mary is a lottery ticket. It just rarely happens.
Right.
Aaron Rodgers did it a couple of times. And I grew up watching the Cowboys when, you know, Roger Staubach had kind of the original one with Drew Pearson against the Vikings. But Hail Marys, there's a reason. It's called a Hail Mary.
It's a prayer.
It's a prayer. So they would have had a chance from about, what, the 22, 23-yard line, one play.
Yeah.
So you got good plays for that, but it's not easy. It's not going to – this idea they would have won had they had an extra play is clearly jumping several steps in the process here. Because of the way they had played, you're suggesting that the guy's going to be open. I mean, but there would have been a legitimate play. That's where I argue. That's why I wanted to see it.
Yep.
One play at the end zone, see what happens. And the Cowboys, though, for me, it's just what they have 14 penalties, completely undisciplined. They deserve to lose. And they got punched in the mouth by the Niners, and they really struggled to. It was just a bad matchup. When I would coach baseball, there's certain pitchers your team would face, and you're like, man, not this guy. He just keeps us off balance. We're undisciplined. We pop up, and we look up, and it's six innings later, and we got like three hits and four base runners. And the physicality of the Niners, it was really the same blueprint the Broncos used to beat the Cowboys.
Yeah.
Run the football, mix in play action, protect the football. The only reason the Cowboys were in that game is because of Garoppolo's just stupid interception. I mean, he airmailed a throw.
So bad.
It was just off. If he doesn't turn the ball over there, it's not even a game.
Jimmy tends to do that.
He has one or two plays a game.
Exactly. Just like, let him back in the thing. I mean, the guy was wide open who he was trying to throw it to, and he just airmailed it. And he loses his kind of, I don't know, he loses his focus a couple times a game. And sometimes, you know, he'll come off to a fast start, and he'll get a nice lead, and he'll start feeling good about himself. He'll start smiling to himself, and, hey, you guys see that? Boom! You know? You got to stay focused. And I think the thing that separates Jimmy from these top-tier quarterbacks is just the 60 minutes of focus that he hasn't been able to kind of pull together. But the Niners, you're right. They overwhelmed him. The Niners ran the ball very, very well. Elijah Mitchell, 27 carries for 96 yards. Debo Samuel had 10 carries for 72 yards. What they're doing with Debo is, I mean, it's a beautiful thing to see. He's kind of a jackknife there. What are your thoughts on Debo's role on that team? And is it just unique to Debo? And or can you find guys out there who can do that kind of similar stuff?
Well, he's got a physicality to his game that's unique as a receiver because he's kind of a hybrid in that way where he's fast like a receiver and kind of a quasi tight end build. Because most receivers, Nate, let's be honest, if you're giving them the ball between the tackles or on sweeps,
that ain't happening.
They're not going to last very long.
No.
I mean, that's like three or four guys getting clean shots at you.
Yeah.
That's why they're receivers. They moved out there so they didn't have to go between the tackles. Debo is unique in every way. I can't recall a receiver. I mean, the Patriots used their tight ends like that when they had Gronk and Aaron Hernandez in the run game on counters. But trying to remember a receiver, I'd say this, LaVisca Chenault at CU,
yeah,
a little similar. That's the level of competition is clearly inferior. But that was like the only thing I can think of as a receiver where he's a legitimate running back threat. But Debo, they couldn't stop him. They couldn't stop him.
No.
I mean, he's averaging 7 yards a pop, and a couple of those are huge runs. So credit to Shanahan, Kyle, in terms of being creative in the way you use one of your best players. It is so frustrating to me, Nate, and this is a little off tangent. When I watch Debo Samuel and how he's used, and I watched how Cincinnati and the Raiders used their receivers, and I tweeted like, oh, so you can actually use your receivers as part of a trick play or as part of the offense, because Jerry Jeudy ran approximately 300 jet sweep motions, and not only did he never get the ball, it took him out of the pass route.
Yep.
So you take your most athletic player in space and eliminate him before the snap. It was so mindlessly stupid by Pat Shurmur to literally just take your best player and send him in motion multiple times a game, and he's so far in motion, he's not even part of the passing route. He's not even part of the passing concept. It was, and then I watched Debo and how they use him. I watched sweeps with Jamar Chase, right?
Yep.
And I'm like, and they're bigger than him. I'm not saying it, but I'm just saying there's a way to, you can't do the jet sweep and never run it.
They didn't run it once.
And so stupid that they would have Jeudy fake after he's past the center.
He would fake like he was outside of the tackle box, and he's carrying out the fake.
It was so high school. I'm like, if you're the linebacker and you see him once he crosses the center, you let him go. Why would you even care if he goes? Because he was put his head down like he's taking the snap when he's at the tackle. So we're doing directional snaps?
Right.
Everything about that play was so stupid and asinine. And what bothered me was not only are you using him as a decoy, you take him out of the passing game. The one guy who in space on a 2-yarder could make it 8, he's out of the passing game. And that's when I watched playoff football the last 6 years. I'm like, yeah, it's pretty clear why the Broncos aren't in the playoffs.
Yep.
They're not as good as these teams, and they're not as smart as these teams. They're not as well coached as these teams. Now, Vic's defense at times certainly was, but they were trying to win 17-13, 20-17 in a league that favors offense. It was so counterintuitive, and he never stepped in. I always wanted to ask him, and I knew we'd get a piffy answer about, when you watch your offense, you would have to slobber if you were the opposing defensive coordinator, say, this is an easy week.
Yeah.
All we have to do is stop the run, and we're winning. I mean, they're so one-dimensional. I can't believe, as a head coach defensive coordinator, he wouldn't watch his own offense and go, you guys are an easy mark. Mix in some trick plays.
I think he did take a deep dive, Troy, after the
Cleveland game.
The Cleveland game, right?
Yeah,
he had extra days off, so they added the jet sweep.
That literally was like
that's
the wrinkle they added.
Yeah.
Then they had one trick play all year where Cortland Sutton threw a pass to, I think it was to Noah Fant.
The last game of the season,
they're already out of it.
Yeah.
I'm like, what are we doing? Get red zone passes for all your coaches. Force them to watch the highlights of other games. And see some of the creativity.
Yeah.
Because you have none of it. And if you're going to be that way, you know this, Nate, then you better be winning your one-on-ones. If you're going to be boring and vanilla, okay. But you better be winning your one-on-ones.
Was it you who asked him why you did the bad and boring thing?
Yeah.
That was nice.
Yeah.
You asked Joe Ellis that,
Joe
Ellis
that.
And he agreed with you.
I hear it from fans every day.
He agreed.
At King Soopers or Safeway or the gas station. If they recognize me, and I don't say that happens a lot, but the first question, like, Troy, when are they going to fix their offense? When are they going to fire their coach? And I talk to season ticket holders that have had season ticket holders. They've been since the beginning, the inception, and then some in the last 10 years. And the same thing is, it's a terrible watch.
Yeah.
It's a terrible watch because you can't score points. I'm not saying it's solely an entertainment product.
It is, pretty much.
But if you're going to play the way they play, you got to win. You can't try to win 17-13 with losing records every year and expect the fans in this market in Broncos country to not be insulted by it And then not only that, some of your worst games are at home where you just get punched in the throat by the Raiders, by the Eagles, by the Ravens. And the fans are, no, no, we're on the right track. What track? The one that leads into a ditch? Give me a break.
Well, we're going to figure out what is that right track and how to get back on it. Stick with us. We're going to talk about that next.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Denver. It's a Reaction Monday, powered by Superbook Sports. In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Denver 7's Troy Rank and Nate Jackson.
Like that M83. Good music, KJ. Smooth, man. This whole album's really good. Yeah, I recommend you check it out, man. You just put it on and just zone out. You know, just go stare at a river or something, you know, or go on a walk. Or close your eyes and think about a childhood memory. Something, man. But the music is great. Troy and I were just having an interesting conversation off the air about what went wrong with the Broncos this year and what went wrong with their offense in particular and why... You know, these guys who are very athletic, they belong in the NFL, why they're not able to really make the play. You know, these veteran coaches between the offensive coordinator, the defensive coordinator, and the head coach, these guys had a ton of experience, but weren't able to translate it into solid performances on the field by their players. And what Troy and I were saying was there is a point at which, you know, you got to cut your players loose and they have to do it. They got to make the play. They got to be empowered by the system, and it can't be relying completely on the system. We're talking about Jerry Jeudy and Albert O. And Albert O's missed block right at the end there of that game against the Chiefs where Melvin Gordon got blown up. Albert O let the guy walk right in front of him and make that tackle. And as a tight end, I mean, that's your block. But also, I'm wondering why he didn't block that guy. And sometimes your head gets so full of the coaching points and what you're supposed to do that the obvious football play in front of you gets forgotten and you forget how to do that. Noah Fant, very physically talented kid, obviously is a likable guy, works hard, but there's something missing from his game. What is it? He doesn't seem to have good instincts when the ball's in his hand. He doesn't try to break tackles. He doesn't stiff arm anybody. He doesn't kind of break down and really juke anybody. Like, did he break any tackles this year? Is he capable of it? Yes, but why isn't he engaged with that? What's going on with Jerry Jeudy? And, you know, we're talking about the fly sweep and the decoy that never really worked, but why can't they find a way to get Jerry Jeudy involved? And then you talk about these receivers, Cortland Sutton and Tim Patrick, who were signed to extensions. George Payton likes them enough to want to keep them around, but the production level wasn't there, so clearly, the finger's being pointed at this coaching staff. The question is, can a new coaching staff come and get more out of these players?
Well, the best coaching I see outside of a Belichick, because he's an outlier to this, the modern-day coach creates ownership among the players, and there's connection with the players. And I say this, and it's not comparable, but I coach my kids from age like 4 through 19. And so you learn a lot about kids over that 15 years, and I was never, my father coached me my entire life, and I had some really great coaches as well at different times, but I never wanted to be coached by a yeller or a screamer and this disciplinarian guy who's my way, highway, this is how we do it. I think there's a way to coach to have fun and invest in players, because I found, and the coaches I've covered, when you invest in the players, you allow them to reach their potential, because once they know you care about them, they care about you, and it matters more to them. And 50 years ago, 20 years ago, that wasn't the case. Coach said it, you did it. I observe with the modern athlete, they want you to invest in them. They want to know you care. And when you get that, what happens? They start to care about you as a coach. It's part of the reason Dan Quinn's such a hot commodity this offseason. But also, they take ownership, Nate, because you empower them. You have simple rules, be on time, listen, play hard. That's it. That's all I want from you. Like John Madden, one of the reasons he was such a great coach, those were types of his rules.
Yeah.
I'm not creating a bunch of rules. So he had a bunch of renegades, guys smoking, drinking, all this stuff. When they got on the field,
smoking cigarettes on the sideline.
They cared about each other, though, and they didn't want to let their coach down. And with the Broncos, it's not that these coaches don't know the game. They do, and they know way more than I do. But I observe a team like you do that becomes robotic.
Yeah.
It's paralysis by analysis. And what happens at the NFL level, where you can't get away with it, you don't play fast. And everyone outside of a few players are all similar in ability.
Yeah.
You're not playing against the guy where you're at, you know, you're at USC and you're playing the kid from Oregon State, or you're, you know, you're at Oklahoma and you're playing the Kansas kid. You're just better than him. So you can make mistakes, run the wrong route, and still get the reward. At the pro level, everyone is so good. When you play slow, it affects you. And what slows you down? I've had this conversation with a multitude of football and baseball players. The common one is when you think, you stink.
Mm.
At some point, it has to be natural. You have to know it well enough. I'm not saying that. But then you bring it to life as a player. The player finishes it. You can't be like coach said, be here at place X, at place Y, at place Z. Oh, now look up, ball here, catch. There's a point where you got here because of your insane athleticism. And defensively, we saw it less because Vic has a knack for putting guys in position to succeed. But they had issues with tackling. That's problematic across the league. Offensively, we just don't weekly see them being put in position to succeed. And you can see the visible frustration. I mean, do you realize, Nate? Cortland Sutton over the last 10 games, 20 catches.
Wow.
Jerry Jeudy, you know how many touchdowns he had last season?
Three?
Zero.
Oh, zero.
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 Yeah. And at one point, with like a few games left in the season, I haven't looked it up, he had like three red zone targets.
Yeah.
So, yes, some of it's on Jeudy. I'm not absolving players and saying it's all the coach's fault, because I've lived the other side of it, at being the son of a coach and been a coach. But as a coach, I have to put my players in position to succeed. And then there's consequences for them if they don't. But it just, you watch Jeudy, it was like he's getting set up to fail. Even with Drew Locke at the end of the year, they're asking Drew to be a better version of Teddy. He's not Teddy. So you take the wag out of the puppy dog's tail. The things he does well, you take away because you're like, we're not turning it over. That's our goal. And then you ask Pat Shurmur, what do you measure offense by? Points. Your whole offensive strategy is to not score points. The only thing you're trying to do is not turn it over.
Yeah.
They completely lose their mind of, if we don't turn it over, we're going to win. Yeah, if you're the 85 Bears,
right,
the 02 Ravens, maybe the 15 Broncos.
And maybe you can do that for 1 year.
It's not sustainable.
It's not. No.
It's frustrating. It is frustrating. And it's why they needed a fresh start. It's why I said when they went 4-10 to end the season, it was like, wow, Vic did it. Stop. They went 4-10. Their wins, 7 of their wins, 5 were against the Giants, Jets, Jaguars, Lions, and Washington.
Yeah.
Part of the reason we saw Dallas get bumped. Who do they beat? They rule the NFC East. The NFC East stinks. The Broncos would have done well in the NFC East.
Yeah, they would have. Well, we're going to get back into the instinct versus the coaching, because this Broncos offense in particular needs to find a way to make more plays. That's about their instinct as players. Coaching, does it hinder them or does it help them? We're going to get into that next.
Happy Martin Luther King Jr. Day, Denver. It's a Reaction Monday, powered by Superbook Sports. In this morning for Schlereth and Evans, here's Denver 7's Troy Rank and Nate Jackson.
MGMT now, huh, KJ? You could be a little hipster on there. I didn't know that about you, but now I do. What's up, everyone? Thanks for joining us. Happy MLK Day. It's Nate and Troy in from Mike and Mark. We're happy you're joining us. Oh, there's a little bit of light coming over the horizon there. The sun is arising, as it always does. And we're talking football. Some exciting matchups yesterday. With some coaching implications for the Broncos. So, if you're watching that Cowboys game, Cowboys and Niners, and you're thinking about potential coaches that could land in other spots, and we're talking about Dan Quinn, talking about Kellen Moore, what about Mike McDaniel? Do you think there's any juice there?
Not for the Broncos. He's going to...
What about this scenario? Dan Quinn gets hired as the next head coach of the Broncos and hires Mike McDaniel as his offensive coordinator.
And you have to promote him to assistant head coach because it would be a lateral move.
But is he calling plays in San Francisco? Isn't Kyle?
Technically he's not, but I don't. Again, they could block it because of the title.
Oh, so it's you literally can't make a lateral move.
No, they can block it if, say, we're not letting him interview. Oh. Like last year, Staley, Sean McVay blocked. who was O'Connell from interviewing with Staley.
Okay.
Because he was going to be the offensive coordinator. He's like, it's no, he's the offensive coordinator here.
Okay.
So you have to, like, make him assistant head coach.
Okay.
Because you could say, yeah, well, he's going to call plays here. That's still the title. They could technically block it. You don't see it a lot, but you this offseason, you got a couple guys I could see getting blocked. But that's a good fit. The curious thing about Dan Quinn, one of the reasons he's such a strong candidate this offseason is the Cowboys defense last year was historically bad under Mike Nolan. COVID year, he's a professor trying to teach this complex defense where we talk about guys playing slow. Those guys had no idea where they were going. I mean, you watch them play and it was like watching a bad high school team. They had no idea where they were supposed to be on the field because guys were literally looking around, not knowing their assignment. Quinn, I covered Quinn when he was in Seattle for like a month leading up to the Broncos Super Bowl against the Seahawks. I got to know him a little bit and just the vibe of the Seahawks. High energy, caffeinated, but one of the things is he connects with players. Like he invests solely in players. You saw Micah Parsons yesterday, like, coach, if you're watching this, don't go. Like he connects with players in a way that's real, intangible. That's not why you would hire him. I'm just pointing that out. That was not Vic Fangio's strength. Fangio's the professor. I tell people, you go to the class, you know he's a great professor. If I stay awake in the class, I'm going to learn a lot.
If I stay awake.
But
Coach Ambien put you to sleep.
Right. Sometimes they're so dry, it's hard. Doesn't mean Vic doesn't know he's brilliant football mind. Again, the modern coach, for me, connects with players in a way, invests with them in a way, kind of understands what kind of music do they like? What's their family like? There's just a thread, a caulking that connects them in a way that's different than the old school, do it my way, I get my car, I'll see you at practice. That's just, to me, that role has evolved as a coach. But Dan Quinn took an historically bad defense. The Cowboys defense this year scored 6 touchdowns. They were an aggressive, opportunistic, they were vulnerable to the run. But what's crazy, and to my point, Dan Quinn's Atlanta Falcons teams didn't have issues offensively. They were really good under Kyle Shanahan and even a year under Sarkisian.
Yeah.
The issue was the defense because he and the GM couldn't get on the same page with the personnel. He couldn't get Beasley to be a good pass rusher. The defense ultimately got Dan Quinn fired in Atlanta, not the offense. So if you're going to hire Dan Quinn, I'm going to trust that's not me, but you have to trust he's going to get the offense right. That's question 1, 2, 3, 4, and 5. Well, after they established they're a leader, because that's the main thing with George Payton. I want a leader. But the next question is, what is your plan for our offense? You cannot pretend that's not the one thing that's holding this team back. They averaged this year under 20 points. They haven't averaged 21 points since Peyton Manning retired. So, Nate, that's why I ask you, when you look at a Quinn and a Moore, they're now available and can be interviewed. Does it concern you they would hire a third straight defensive coordinator in Dan Quinn, or do you trust he could find the right fit offensively?
Because of what you just mentioned, the offense that he had under him in Atlanta shows me that his ego is not too big to build up and empower his offense. And I felt like Vic Fangio's ego, his defensive ego, was too big to build up and empower and create a dynamic offense that's going to challenge him every day, that's going to make him look stupid sometimes at practice. That's a good thing for your team, not a bad thing. And the several practices I went to in training camp, Not a lot of offensive movement. Not a lot of, you know what I mean? Not a lot of fireworks. Not a lot of guys making plays down the field. I mean, it was always Teddy versus Drew. Who won today? I don't know. Nothing happened.
Right. That's what I would tell people.
Nothing happened.
You would literally look at the turnovers. That was like the one thing you try to look, because neither one of them made many plays.
Right. And you know what happens in training camp? Turnovers happen. Interceptions happen. Quarterbacks were trying to make the team and make plays and throw the ball to their receivers downfield and give their receivers chances to go up and make plays. That's what training camp is for. Interceptions happen. We were counting the interceptions of practice, and that was just kind of doomed from the start. It was doomed from the start, but I want to go into that a little bit deeper. How doomed was it, this Teddy versus Drew competition? What did that do to this offense overall? Did that create the bad football, and is there a way to get out of it? We're going to get into that next.
Hey, it's Mike Evans. Siltahar Motors understands sometimes bad things happen to good people. That includes bankruptcy. If that is you, you can still purchase a car at Siltahar with zero money down in almost all cases. This is a program they've been doing for 25 years. The dealership itself is almost 60. Family-owned business that is proud of their reputation and proud to be a huge part of the Broomfield community. If you file bankruptcy, Siltahar Motors can help. Zero down and no payments for 45 days in almost all cases. Contact Team Zero Down at 720-446-9222 or online at sthmotors.com.